We're going to get specifically into to the Arctic in a moment, but can you talk more broadly about climate change? What challenges does climate change present to the Department of Defense?
Well, there are many changes, John, that that climate change not only will present, but is starting to already today present to the Department of Defense. Some of these as the sea level rises and as the temperature of the ocean rises, these are both both challenges. The sea level rise primarily for protecting our infrastructure. Of course, the Navy has many, by definition, has ports at sea level. So if the sea level changes, and particularly if it is coupled with any subsidence of the land, we need to ensure that we understand what will it take to protect that that valuable investment. The temperature change we're concerned with in the ocean, because that is, along with the just simply adding more water from glaciers and ice sheet melts, as you in fact warm up any liquid body, including the ocean, it expands. So what the oceanographers talk about is thermal expansion may be a significant component of the sea level rise. And some very smart people, including some folks out at Woods Hole, Dr. Susan Avery, believes that this may be an underestimated component of what we're observing right now in sea level rise. Climate change may also bring increases in storm severity. We are very interested in really understanding what is the distribution of extreme events. For I think the people in the audience, if you think of sort of a range of weather outcomes, kind of the day-to-day impact, if you will, of climate, as on a let's say on a notional bell curve, if you move the mean to the right, you will of course put more area or potentially more extreme events under one side, that right side of the bell curve, if you move that mean higher. But we're interested in not only how does the average change, but does the shape of that bell curve change? Or to put it another way, do the tails of those distributions become fatter so that maybe not only do you see higher highs for temperatures, but do you also see lower lows? As I'm sure you know, John, many cities in the United States, as we wrap up July here in 2009, are in fact experiencing their coldest July on record. While the Pacific Northwest and in fact Alaska and Fairbanks have seen some of their hottest temperatures on record. 1 year, 1 month certainly does not indicate a trend, but as time continues, we are very interested as to whether or not these shapes of this weather, and especially the extremes, are changing there. Climate change will potentially change the ocean currents. Those ocean currents have tremendous impact on fisheries and the biological resources that many people in the world depend on. The desertification, as you change precipitation patterns, ocean acidification is something that I'm very, very concerned about, because as you put more and more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, it has to go somewhere. And primarily, a large portion is absorbed by the ocean. That carbon dioxide, though, in fact, slightly changes the pH level or the acidity level, if you will, of the ocean. Not by a lot, but by enough so that potentially many of the small marine organisms, such as phytoplanktons and zooplanktons, may have a hard time reproducing their shells. And if those small and somewhat unloved critters, if you will, at the bottom of the food chain, if they start having a hard time reproducing and thriving, I'm very concerned as to what that means for the larger food chain, and ultimately for humans to be able to use the ocean as a food source.
Now, you've listed quite a few different challenges here. What about some of the potential significant ramifications for national security?
For national security, as I kind of mentioned, there's several places. First is, as the climate changes, what does this do to people? Especially, what does this do to populations in who may already be poor, who may be already under stress? Those populations probably have the least ability to adapt to a changing world, especially if that change becomes quick. So for our policy and strategy teams, we need to kind of understand what does that driver, if you will, set up for possible future places where the nation may decide that our military is required. Where also does it set up the increasing potential for large-scale humanitarian assistance and disaster relief operations? So I'm sure you know humanitarian assistance and disaster relief is, in fact, one of the six core missions that the United States Navy, along with the Marine Corps and the Coast Guard, signed up to when we jointly signed our Cooperative Maritime Strategy for the 21st century. So that's one place that we are we're very interested in. For the Arctic, as the climate changes and as the sea lanes start to open, the United States Navy has roles up here in maritime security and working with our Coast Guard partners and our international partners to ensure that the sea lanes remain open and that navigation is free for all. The resource exploration will potentially become more and more important in the Arctic. Some of the studies have indicated that that there could be potentially very significant parts of the United States remaining reserves under the shelves here up in the Arctic on the Arctic ocean floor in our exclusive economic zone. And finally, the Arctic will also open up opportunities for ecotourism, potentially for fishing, although the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration is studying that very, very carefully. They want to make sure that we manage the fisheries here in the Arctic before just opening them up and then having to react to potential overfishing. So NOAA is being very, very prudent in that regard. Commercial shipping, as I mentioned, will also likely be increasing here.